Time to catch up on matters legal, as we now do once a month. And it's time to chat to Antonio Flores from Lawbird Legal Services. Good morning, Antonio.
Very good morning to you, Bill.
Nice to talk to you. I was having a little chat with Dave on air this morning, and he was discussing that every time that he passes a cyclist who is Lycra clad, he leaves them a very good metre and a half in case it's you on your bike, Antonio.
Yes, that's very true. How do they call them? The mammals? Is that how they call them?
Oh, I don't know.
Middle-aged men in Lycra.
Oh, brilliant. I've never heard that. I love it. Oh, mammal. That's very good. I like that.
That's right. That's right. That's what they call them, yeah. In the UK, anyway, that's the way they call them, yeah.
I love it. Oh, well, I'll look out for you next time. Next time, I'll give you a nice little bit. I'll shout Lawbird out of the window and see if you react, then I won't go near you.
Right. Okay.
Now, we're talking contracts today, verbal and oral contracts. And we'll start with important things like buying a house. And I would be absolutely staggered that anyone would expect that some kind of chat in a pub and an agreement to buy a property would be in any way legal.
Yes, yes. You know, the thing about law is that it's very particular in that every country has its own systems. You know, you go to the field of medicine or science or technology, they're all pretty much the same. There's no variation, no matter where you go in the world. But law is just so different. Even if you change your city, and it could be a different law.
Yeah.
Anyway, the idea here is just to run through a few sort of situations where, you know, we can find ourselves in the middle of a binding contract situation just by doing things that we initially would have thought they do not have a binding effect.
Wow.
You know, for example, it's a very simple, a rental, for example.
Yes.
Okay. A rental contract in Spain is created simply by making a payment into the owner's account, okay?
So
if you have the keys of a house and you've made a payment and you've said rental, okay, obviously not any person, but, you know, you've got keys, you've got possession and so on, that's already deemed to be a rental agreement, okay? The rest of the contract, which is unwritten, will be governed by the law. The law has enough provisions in itself, the Rental Act, that it will construe a contract just based on the situation created by the parties, okay?
I remember when I first arrived here, Antonio, that we rented, and I wasn't aware of the rental laws, which, as you say, in Spain are quite different to what I was a purchaser in the UK, so I didn't understand the rental laws particularly here. And I was given this runaround about 11-month contracts for the first 2 or 3 years, and I was thinking, this can't be right.
Yeah. You know, the 11-month contract is a legal fallacy, which lawyers have been battling against for years, okay? We seem to lose all the time because still today the 11-month contract is being advertised and sold and offered and signed, okay?
Goodness.
There isn't such a thing in law as an 11-month contract. There isn't a 13-month contract or a 9-month contract. Contracts in Spain can be freely agreed between the parties, and the validity or the implications of signing a contract in terms of how long you're going to be in the property is based on the intentions of the party, not what you write in them. Of course, you can write in them certain things, but if they contradict the real situation, then the law overrides. For example, if you sign a 5-month contract, which is a temporary contract with your tenants happen to have the kids in school and they are residing in Spain, that contract automatically becomes a 5-year contract, okay?
So
it's optional on the buyer, mandatory on the owner. Mm-hmm. Sorry, on the buyer, on the tenant, mandatory on the landlord, okay? Mm-hmm. So the landlord may find himself, herself, thinking that 5 months they're going to be out and they can stay up to 5 years, okay?
Mm.
So it is important to have those facts right because, you know, what you sign in a document is not always what is going to stand in a court of law.
Interesting.
Okay? Now, other things, for example, to give you examples of things that you can all of a sudden get yourself into without even knowing, and others which you specifically need a certain format. For example, a mortgage loan. Okay, mortgage loans do not exist unless they are signed at the notary. Okay,
right.
You can never have a verbal mortgage loan. You cannot even have a private mortgage loan signed between two parties, no matter how many witnesses. There has to be a notary public. And it has to be registered in the land registry. Otherwise, it just does not exist.
Which is fair enough, to be honest, with something that important in your life.
Yes, correct. Exactly. But, you know, imagine you lend someone some money and, you know, that other person, you know, you lend some money and then you, all of a sudden you try to register a mortgage against the property of that person because you think that he's not going to pay you.
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to happen unless you've gone to the notary before and you specifically said you wanted to be a mortgage loan with all the various conditions of a mortgage loan. Otherwise, it doesn't have any validity. It would just be a simple loan, okay?
Right.
An unsecured loan. For example, wills, okay? We've got all the idea that a will is done at the notary public in front of the notary, and then, you know, that's sent to Madrid, which is all good and fair. It's the way it is.
Good, okay? System.
But there are other ways. For example, you can sign a will on a piece of paper. It's what we call the holographic will. Okay, this will basically says that you know it's a will that needs to go to the court so that there's a probate done on it. But you know, there's been cases of people writing wills on a wall. Okay,
what?
You have a will signed in a wall. On a wall, so long as it's got the different details, you know, your name, the inheritors, and it's signed, that would be classed as a valid will.
So if you were out at a restaurant one night with your family, let's say, Antonio, and you got a bit fed up with one of them, and you said, do you know what, I'm changing my will, and you wrote it out on a napkin and signed it, could you write somebody out of the will there and then?
100%.
Wow! 100%.
Yes, yes. So long as it's dated, it's signed, and it's in the language of the nationality of the testator, something he understands.
Does it have to be witnessed?
Okay. No, it doesn't have to be witnessed. It doesn't have to be witnessed.
Oh, my goodness.
It would have to be then taken to court for probate, for the signature to be checked, okay?
Yeah.
Unlike the powers of attorney, sorry, the wills that we normally do in notaries, you know, which, you know, you just do them there and then, and they're forever. Okay.
So my will on my napkin then, so I've signed it, and then that goes to probate and some handwriting expert works out whether it was me that signed it or not.
Correct. Well, that's the way they used to do them in the old days, you know, people who didn't have access to notary publics or they were very sick at a certain time. And, you know, I mean, life was very different 100 years ago. And our civil code is 145 years old. So things, you know, have evolved over the years. And, you know, wills used to be done before on a piece of paper. They don't do them anymore nowadays.
Yeah.
Okay. But they are still, they would be still valid. The civil code does accept them.
How
okay?
amazing. Wow.
Now, for other things, for example, a power of attorney. Okay.
Yeah.
You want to buy a house, you can buy a house for someone without a power of attorney, mm-hmm. but you cannot sell it. Okay. So if, for example, a client of mine gives me 100,000 euros and they say, I'd like to buy a house. Can you do it for me? I need to go back to my country tomorrow.
Yes.
And we don't have a power of attorney. I will tell him, yes, we go to the notary and we use what we call a verbal mandate. The verbal mandate allows me to, with his money, buy a house for him. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to sell it, that's not possible, because the notary will not accept it. Imagine people selling other people's homes. That would be the end of peace as we know it, you know. So, you know, that change differs between whether you are a buyer or a seller. Now, in a partnership, in a marriage, there's also a classic dispute when either partner makes payments to each other. What is that? Is that seen as a gift?
Mm.
Or is it a payment towards the economy of the couple? You know, for example, a husband buys a car for the wife, okay? Or one partner buys a car for the other partner. The courts, in this case, what they need to do is they tend to see the overall dynamics of the relationship to understand whether that was intended to be a gift or it was intended to be sort of an ex parte payment.
Oh.
In other words, a payment that when the couple splits, then they do need to settle you know, between themselves to see who's paid what, and then obviously compensate or pay back whatever it is.
Okay.
We've seen situations, for example, typical jewellery. Jewellery is always deemed or almost always deemed as a gift.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But for example, power partners paying school. One of them pays the school. The other one pays something else. Those are never seen as gifts to the other party, but just simply as a way to support the family. But even between themselves, you know, you buy a trip for a holiday, you know, because we've seen it all here. So we see situations where when there is a split up or a breakup, they start claiming things that you would have thought you couldn't claim, you know. So, yeah, we have those situations. It's always good to put it in writing, just to make sure there are no issues. Now, a very important thing, which a lot of expats do seem to miss all the time, notifications from the tax office, from court, Social Security, the town hall, patronato. A lot of people think that if you don't pick those summons up or those notifications, there will be no implications because you haven't collected them.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So this is a very serious mistake in Spain. You know, in Spain, the summons or notifications that are unattended will not stop the process. Okay.
So this is an interesting one, Antonio. So you've got a letter coming from the tax office, let's say, and let's say you live in an urbanisation and you have a little bloke, the gardener or whoever it is, the handyman who collects all the post, and their job is to stick it in the post box. And, you know, if you're not there, then it has to be signed for when you go to the post office. Let's suppose the gardener or handyman just forgets about it and goes off to the pub for the afternoon and leaves your court summons or your tax office summons lying in a cardboard box. You've never been served with it.
Yeah. Okay. You know, the law does have some remedies for that. Okay. For example, the court does say that a porter or a handyman or someone working in the building is allowed to pick up or collect a document. Okay. He will be properly identified and he will be liable as well.
Really?
For any issues that may arrive. Yes.
So I wonder if they know that.
Well, you know, as well, tenants as well. We've had a lot of situations where tenants were collecting the summons. They have an obligation to deliver it to the owner, okay? Sometimes they don't.
How would you know it was a summons if you didn't open their mail?
Well, you know, this is the thing. The courts tried to summons twice, sometimes even three times, okay? The tax office, for example, there's an issue. Okay, nowadays, for example, someone who has got an electronic signature, it would all go to a mailbox, an electronic mailbox, which is much, much cleaner, better.
Or an accountant, also, if you've got an accountant who's got access to your signature,
Exactly, but they need to open them every so often. Otherwise, you know, those summons will equally go unattended and they can cause a damage in the sort of near future. But if the tax office will try once or twice. They do say that if this letter is not unattended, they will not send any further notifications and the procedure will go forward. Now, we see this a lot of times when people complain that they've had money taken out from their accounts.
Yes, okay? Yes.
This is something very Spanish, very annoying for expats. And I have to explain it, you know, time and time again that it's a system. We just cannot challenge it. Some people want to challenge it in the European Court of Justice. I say to them, good luck, you know, but don't waste your time. Just try to be on top of things rather than the other way around.
Right.
And make sure that, you know, if you can attend, do it. Make sure all the payments are covered.
Okay? Wow, okay. So basically, yes, you're saying the cases where money just disappears from somebody's bank account and they've got no idea what it is, and that's been something that allegedly has been sent with, you just haven't spotted.
Well, exactly. You know, it could be from anything. Sometimes traffic fines, for example. Some people don't even bother with them and they just expect them to be taken out from their account. But that's, again, a mistake because then you end up paying more than double, okay?
Yeah.
If you take care of a fine, they always give you a reduction or they condone part of it if you pay early, okay? Sometimes even up to 50%. So it's always good to make sure that, you know, those documents are attended. Sometimes they're all in Spanish, of course, so... You know, people need to have them translated.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's where professionals come in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very interesting. You know? Okay, it's just suddenly struck me now why the little bloke here at my urbanisation who collects the mail has just gone off with a nervous breakdown. That makes total sense to me now. I now feel very, very sorry for him. The onus that was put on his head was far more than I thought it was. I thought his job was to weed the gardens, but sadly not. He's off to court for me. Excellent news.
Yes, you know, it's the civil code, but also it's the... civil procedural code as well. And, you know, many times you get the bank sending letters and sometimes it's actually loan foreclosure orders, you know, which need to be attended in court as well. If, for example, you've missed payments and, you know, you for whatever the reason, you were not in the country and you want to pay up And okay, most times you know when you've not paid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Though people tend to forget, they say, "Oh, I was not notified." Well, you know, you tend to know when you have an obligation to pay. So it does happen that the either a tenant or a caretaker in the house or in the urbanisation, as they say here, will have that ability to collect documents, but they have an obligation as well. Okay,
yeah.
To deliver them to the owners.
How okay? Interesting.
Whichever the way, and sometimes they just deliver it in the community of owners, and then the community of owners make sure they find their way to the owners. Okay.
Mm.
Now we have another situation. For example, if you send someone or you give someone €10,
yes.
What is that? Is it a gift or is it a loan? Okay.
Doesn't it depend on the conversation you've had with them?
Exactly. Now, you know, this happens a lot, okay? You see a lot of people paying money to someone else, between friends or acquaintances or family, and, you know, then they claim it back. Then the other guy says, well, I thought it was just, you know, you were giving it to me because I was not doing very well. I thought it was a gift. I said, well, no, I was expecting it back.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to be alone, make sure it's in writing. Mm. If you don't have that trust in that person, because otherwise it will be deemed as a gift, okay?
Right.
With all that goes with it, obviously €10, you're not going to go to the tax office to pay any tax on it. But, you know, if it's a larger sum, it needs to be in writing.
Yeah.
Okay? It doesn't take too long. And it doesn't have to be rude to, you know, to sort of expect or to demand from someone to have it in writing. Okay?
Sure,
Some people feel a bit apprehensive or they might think that, you know, I distrust them. You know,
I quite like the story you said of the guy who wrote the will on somebody's wall. Well, I think if you lend somebody money, then if you wrote that on their own wall at home, then every time they went home, they would be reminded that they owe you money.
You know, the guy on the wall, which does it, is a true story. He was actually a guy who was dying, and they didn't have time to take him to a notary public, and they didn't have a piece of paper, so they just wrote it on the wall.
How extraordinary. Well, we've all learned something today, Antonio. If people want to find out more, where do they go for your splendid services, sir?
They can call us on 952-861-890, or they can email us on info@lawbird.com.
Fantastic. Antonio, always a pleasure to talk to you, and I shall look out for those mammals as I drive.
Urban dictionary.com.
Love it. Antonio, have a great week. See you later. Cheers.